everyone. I'm Darren Olivier from Adams & Adams. It's office based in Johannesburg in Sandton. I'm an IP lawyer. I've been doing this for about 20-odd years. I'm joined in the studio by two fantastic people in my team, Lita and Maureen. I'll leave them to introduce themselves in a moment. What we're going to talk about is intellectual property for entrepreneurs. In this particular podcast, we had a wonderful IP evening series where we were educating in Vilakazi Street in Soweto, and what we're going to try and bring to you is some of the top tips for IT entrepreneurs from that particular talk. In particular, we want to look at the interface between intellectual property and entrepreneurs, what they should be thinking about, how they can make money using intellectual property, how they can preserve and protect their innovation, and basically how it can help them in their businesses. The one thing we've noticed is that IP is often overlooked. People think it's something for lawyers, very expensive, and we want to debunk that. So what we're going to do is use some props, the Coca-Cola bottle. We're going to look at the monkey selfie, the big story that's been hitting the news networks about this monkey that took a selfie of himself and who owns the rights and the copyright in the monkey. And we'll also look at Donald Trump's covfefe to try and bring these things across to you in a lighthearted way. Hopefully it's educational. So without further ado from me, I'm going to just hand over to Maureen just to introduce herself and perhaps Lita as well.
Hi, good morning everyone, or good day. My name is Maureen. I've been working in the Sandton office, doing IP for about 3 years. Specialize, you know, in trademark litigation and protection, as well as the prosecution and filing of trademarks, as well as IP commercialization.
Lita.
Hey, I'm Lita Miti Kamata. I work with Maureen and Darren, specializing in intellectual property for about 7 years now. Do pretty much what Maureen does in terms of brand enforcement, brand protection, and management of brands, really, and helping clients commercialize or create value out of their brands. I'm quite passionate about the pro bono space, work in that space quite often, where we come in and we help entrepreneurs and startups to recognize IP within their business, to protect that IP, and hopefully use that.
At no charge.
At no charge, yes.
Wow. Can I get your services for no charge?
No, not at this present moment, no.
How do you qualify for your pro bono project?
Well, you fill in a form, what we call our pro bono application form, where we request information typically to check whether you do have an established business or not. Is your bank balance healthy or not? And if you meet that criteria, essentially, then we can offer those services.
But if your bank balance is healthy, why do you need pro bono services? I mean, pro bono means for free. Let's give it a little Latin here. Okay.
Yes.
So what do you mean by healthy bank balance?
Well, if you're making over 150,000 Rand a month in your business, then we certainly can't help you on a pro bono basis. Yeah. But if you find that you can't allocate enough resources for legal help for us to do it at a normal charge, then we can probably sit down at the table and help you strategize and plan out your budget as to how we can help you protect your intellectual property in a cost-effective manner that is suitable to your business.
And how many of these instructions do you get? How many matters do you do pro bono work for?
On average, about 3 to 4 per month.
Per month?
Yes.
And then you've been running the project for how long?
2014.
So 3 years. So it's quite formidable. Okay. So you know to get hold of Lita if you want some pro bono services. But what we're looking at here from entrepreneurs who many of them have got innovative ideas, many of them have got bank balances or balance sheets at above 150,000 Rand, but maybe not listed on the stock exchange and have huge amounts of funding. And what we're trying to do, I think, Maureen, is to try and educate what is the minimum, what are the IP considerations for entrepreneurs. So let's look at identifying what is intellectual property. Let's talk about this Coca-Cola bottle, the famous Coca-Cola bottle. There it sits in your mind. It's you're visualizing the shape. It's a screw top or even a lift off bottle. It's got the distinctive script. It's red or it's of see through color. It's got that wave underneath it. What are the IP rights, Maureen, that relate to that bottle? Can you go through at least one or two of them, and we'll see what but we can take it from there.
Okay, sure. Right. So if you visualize the bottle, you'll see that it's a shape. The shape of it is in a very distinctive form or manner. That in itself can function as a trademark, and you can apply and register for the shape of a bottle. As well as the script on the writing, on the label of the trademark, the Coca-Cola in that script and font, that is registrable as a trademark as well. The label in itself can also be registered as a trademark as it appears like that. You just, you know, take that actual label and apply for that as a trademark as well.
So how do you go about applying for it as a trademark? What do you do?
Okay, so essentially you we have what we call a form TM1 where we apply, where we file for the trademark, and we actually put a graphic representation of the trademark on this form. When applying for the trademark, we send it through to the registry, and it goes through a process. Essentially, about a trademark takes about 3 years to get registered.
3 years?
Yeah, it's quite. It's a bit of a process, yes. However, look,
why
I mean,
would I want to get a trademark?
It's worthwhile. It's
why?
Absolutely
why
worthwhile. So, look, let's just go through the quick process. Okay, we file for the trademark. The trademark will then get examined by the registry. They will let you know, look, yes, you can proceed with the trademark, or perhaps there's something on the register already, and they say, no, you can't have the trademark, or perhaps you can have it, have the trademark depending on certain conditions. Once we've gone through that hurdle, then the trademark will either be accepted, and if it's accepted, hopefully, then it will go through to get advertised. Now, this period is about a three-month period where the trademark is advertised for any third parties to object to the trademark if they feel that your trademark is similar to theirs or identical, or perhaps they've been using a trademark for however long, much longer than perhaps you have, and they have rights essentially to that particular trademark. Once that 3 month period goes is over, a trademark will then proceed through to registration. So yes, it is a bit of a long process. However, I mean, it has to go through its own.
But 3 years is a very long time. Lita, why would one get a registered trademark?
Because it's a title deed to your brand. Yeah. If you have that registered trademark, you can tell people, hey, back off, I've got this registered. You can't use something identical or similar to what I've got.
But what do I do for 3 years?
Yeah,
you use it for 3 years in the meantime.
But do I get any protection for it in 3 years?
Certainly. Yeah. If you manage to use that brand or trademark, and you acquire a reputation in it, then you can certainly assert your rights against somebody else who comes and uses something that creates confusion in the market, where people start to think that they're associated with you, or, you know, there's some type of endorsement by you on their brands, which is not the case.
Yeah.
So certainly if you use it and you manage to get a reputation, you are in a position to...
Okay, but I use it in Johannesburg here, and someone infringes my trademark down in Cape Town or passes off. What's passing off?
Passing off is when someone uses a trademark or a brand or a getup that's perhaps similar to yours or has elements that are similar to yours that creates the impression that there's an association between you and that other person, which is not the case.
Okay, so that wouldn't be the case. If we're using and own my reputations in Johannesburg and someone uses it in Cape Town, they would not be confused because I don't have a reputation case.
Certainly, yes. So reputation is quite a geographical thing to the extent that you can show.
And a registered trademark, would that be
that's
the same?
That's national.
So it's automatically national. So that's one of the advantages.
Yeah. And just to add in there, sorry, Darren, just to add in, your filing date is of utmost importance. Once your trademark gets registered, then you have the right to claim back, if you're going to sue someone, claim back your damages from the date of your filing of the trademark. So that's why that filing date is of such importance, that registration actually is effective from the date of your filing.
Okay, so although it takes 3 years to become registered, it's backdated effectively the protection from the filing date, which means that if there's infringement in the meantime, you can send a letter putting them on notice saying, hey, stop using your brand.
Yes.
You're living in Cape Town. I'm the dude with the registered trademark. Yes. I was first to register.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I have rights. So that's the advantage.
Oh, when it's registered, I'll come after you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about when you go after someone. Let's just quickly talk about that. What are you looking for? Are you looking for what does the law give you? What are the I think there are four things. Is that right? You want to stop. What else can you get?
Right. Okay, so your remedies, essentially, you're looking at your damages. So you can claim damages from the party. So you have to indicate and show that what loss you've actually acquired from the time that the infringement has begun. Essentially, you can also stop the person from continuing with the infringement as well. And you can also get delivery of the goods or services, if it is, then you just get something back. So you just retain or get it out of their control. I think that's about the costs, surely.
If you go and go to court, it's going to cost you money.
Yes. Yep.
But now this is, you know, so you go to court, it costs money. And you said you're going to get damages back. What do you mean by that? Is it, surely it's difficult to show damages from through the infringement of a trademark?
Yeah, that's right. It is quite difficult. However, if you can show loss of sales, loss of sales, and just even if you show evidence of people who are, for example, confused, they send through emails and say, hey, I don't like your product because I bought a similar one to you or whatever, you know, just anything that shows that you have had, there's been a decrease in your product and people's faith in your product, and also monetary, you know, indication of what you've lost.
Alternatively, if you can't show actual loss of money, you can claim royalties. Mm-hmm. So what a person who would have been authorized to use your brand, what they would have paid you in royalties, you can claim that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if the, I mean, if the benchmark for, let's say, putting your name on a T-shirt or in the back of a T-shirt is, say, 6% of net sales, you'd be entitled to that net
sales. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So the four things are, you can stop them, you can get delivery up of all the infringing products, you can claim a reasonable royalty or damages if you can show it, and you can get your costs.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's quite valuable. And that, I guess, is the value of the trademark.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Your title deed to your brand, as you said it before. Okay. So let's move on. We've talked about trademarks. You talked about the shape of a bottle, three-dimensional shape. That can be a trademark. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and what else could it be? I mean, what else could a shape qualify in terms of registered protection?
Design. Yeah, you get a registered design for the shape of the bottle. That's another form of protecting a shape.
And how would you do that? So you'd give the drawings for the design and you put it on the same kind of TM1 form or what?
More or less, yes. Yeah, you just have to show a proper depiction of the shape of the bottle and all the dimensions, all sides of the shape of the bottle, and then you submit that as well.
But the thing with designs, though, is that it has to be new. And it has to be aesthetically pleasing or have a functional element. So it's important that you don't go out to market with that product and then try to protect it as a design afterwards.
All right.
Alternatively, if you've gone out, you can protect it as a trademark because there's no requirement there for trademarks to be new.
But there are difficulties in protecting shapes of trademark. You really have to show that it functions as a trademark.
Okay.
So if you saw that Coca-Cola bottle without the lettering Coca-Cola, it would you would need to know
that is a Coca-Cola bottle.
So that's the trademark. Mm-hmm. And then on the design side, it has to be new and not commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And newness, I mean, that's worldwide, is that right? Or just in South Africa?
Worldwide.
And how would one determine if your design is new? I mean, how do they do that? They do searches, don't they?
Yes, they do. So we typically have clients walking in and they would say, hey, I've looked on the internet. I haven't seen anything like this. You search what we call design registries on the internet. If you just type in the different ones for the UK, South Africa, etc., try to see if you can find anything.
Okay, and they are registered design databases, which
one? Yeah, absolutely.
Getting back to the trademark, let's say I have a new trademark and I want to launch my new product. And I'm worried because someone else might have the same trademark or something similar. What step must I take to making sure that I have the comfort that I'm not going to suddenly get an infringement or lawyers at my doorstep asking me to stop?
Well, I would say I'll take this one.
Okay, sure.
Then we would definitely recommend that you come to see one of us or an intellectual property lawyer, and to help you do what we call a pre-clearance search. And this basically is searching in the National Trademarks Register of the region where you want to protect that brand to see if there are any identical or similar marks on register which could pose a bar to you having this registration or to you using this mark for your brand. The search takes about 5 days to report. It's basically going through the data of, I don't know, how many search results you get, depending on what the word is and whether it's something that's a normal word people would use or it's something totally invented that's got nothing to do with your brand. They would typically access that and will give you what we call a search report, where we analyze your chances of success in registering the mark and in being able to defend your brand in case someone sues you.
Okay. And how do you check for similarity? I mean, what is it? You said similar mark. What are you looking for?
Well, marks are considered similar depending on whether they're similar phonetically, how they sound, visually, how they look, and conceptually, the message that they convey to consumers.
Okay, so getting back to Coca-Cola. Right.
Sorry, Darren,
yes, carry on.
Just to add on to what Lita said there with regards to pre-clearance searches, I don't know if you'll remember, I mentioned in the process of a trademark getting registered is that it gets examined. Ideally, the pre-clearance search tries to kind of have an idea of what's on the register. So that when the registry comes back and says, yes, you may have the trademark or you may have it upon certain conditions, we can kind of predetermine or have an idea. Are we going to have any issues going forward? Will something come up that will stop us, that will bar us from proceeding with the trademark? The last thing you want to do is to apply for the trademark and you find that there's something identical on the register and you can't have the trademark, which is a total waste of money and funds. So ideally, you want to go through that clearance search, make sure that you're not infringing on anybody's rights on the register, and that will at least give you
some
comfort.
And I guess it's another advantage of a registered trademark is your trademark will be there. So when others are doing these
it'll bar them.
Yeah. So it kind of silently protects your brand.
That's right.
Okay, so we've gone on to designs, you've looked at trademarks. One more question. How long does a trademark last?
Right, so trademark lasts for 10 years. It is renewable every 10 years. You have a period of 6 months before the actual final date and a period of 6 months after that final date to renew your trademark.
And it can last indefinitely.
Absolutely, I was about to say you can have it for as long as you want.
As long as you renew it.
And the design?
15 years.
Aesthetic designs. You also get functional designs, and those are slightly different, but those are for 10 years. Yeah. Okay, so... Right, we've gone through designs. Let's have a look at the content of the bottle. Now, this famous Coca-Cola product, right, has stood the test of time, sorry to borrow from another product's tagline, but it really is, of course, very valuable and underpins some of the brand value in Coca-Cola. So how does one protect the recipe for a Coke?
Okay. So... essentially, the recipe of a Coke or any other product per se, there is a trade secret in the recipe. Ideally, you as a producer of the goods or of the Coca-Cola drink, you will know what goes into the recipe. Okay, so it is protectable by trade secrets. Trade secrets essentially are it's confidential information, something that you hold that has value to your business and that creates a competitive edge against other parties. It is protectable by identifying firstly what is deemed to be a secret. So what is the recipe? And ensuring that it is kept confidential you can use confidentiality agreements, especially with employees. It's very important to educate your employees that this is a secret. This is what makes our business thrive. And ideally, you want to have the recipe perhaps protected in a vault or in a safe or somewhere where it is not easily accessible for anyone to get hold of. Because once you want to show that it is a trade secret, you have to show that you took reasonable steps to ensure that that product was kept a secret and that it was just not made easily accessible to everyone. So giving non-disclosure agreements, for example, where you will make a party make a sign that they will keep this information confidential, that is one way of keeping it a secret. Marking the documents as confidential, that's another way. Look at it, somebody will just look at the paper and say, okay, this is not for my eyes per se. However, whatever they do with it is something else. But ideally, you want to protect in that way. That is more also similar to the KFC herbs and spices, the 11 herbs and spices. They're protected in a secret vault where only a certain amount of people know exactly where it is held and what is actually included in those spices.
So, Lita, you want
to
add?
Yeah, so just to add on to what Mo is saying, a trade secret must be that. A trade secret mustn't be known by everybody, which means then you can't use a patent to protect that recipe.
Because tell me about this. I'm like confused now. What's the difference between a patent and a trade secret?
Okay, so a patent is a form of intellectual property that protects, I think, probably the easiest way for me to explain it is if you think of how a thing works, or if you think of a Coca-Cola can, how you open that...
the bottle, the top.
Yeah, not necessarily the screw top, but that thing. that you pop open, you can almost hear the sound.
Yeah.
So how the first of that kind would have been protected by way of a patent, kind of protects the way a thing works, if you will, to put it in simple terms. A patent must be new. That's very important. So it can't be out there worldwide. You can't go to market, then want to backtrack and protect it. It's a recipe. You actually can't protect as a patent.
Why is that?
Why can't we protect it, Mo,
well,
as
I
a patent?
It's in the Act. It says there's specific exclusions for patent protection, and recipes are one of them. What is the other one? Do you know?
I mean, business methods.
Business methods. What else? Software?
Yes, correct. That's protected by copyright.
Things, games, you know, Monopoly game, for example, you can't protect. So there's certain things you can't protect as a patent. It must be new. Again, novelty that goes throughout the world. And how long does the patent last?
20 years.
20 years.
20 years. And then after that, it's public domain.
So why would you then choose a patent over trade secret protection? Because trade secret protection, surely you can protect that particular trade secret for as long as you can keep it a secret, correct? How does the concept of a patent then work? So you've come up with something new and qualifies for a patent. It helps the thing work. It's very powerful. Or it's a new drug and you want to patent it, or you want to keep it a secret. What is the, I suppose, why would you patent it, and what is the disadvantage of patenting it?
Well, if you patent it, you disclose it. And in return, you get exclusivity to that invention for a period of 20 years. So other people can't use it. And if they do use it without your permission, you can go and sue them for patent infringement. But then after the 20-year mark, that's it. So you would use a patent then to have that area of exclusivity, to kind of also foster innovation, because patents will be built on other patents, as opposed to a trade secret, which must be kept secret and, like Mo said, in a vault or wherever, where very few people have access to it.
So that's it. I think, I mean, the whole idea of intellectual property rights was then to foster innovation. The idea of fostering, one of the things that underpinned it is that, well, disclosing innovation will create further innovation. Right. So if you are thinking about a new product, and you can go and search a database of all these other patents, one, you will determine whether you might infringe anyone else's.
Absolutely.
But also you might get some ideas that you can use for your own, especially ones that are called off-patent, which have expired. So the drug trade is one, for example, and we see various methods to try and prolong the patent.
Certainly.
But I guess one of the advantages to having trade secret protection is that you can last. I mean, the Coca-Cola bottle, the Coca-Cola recipe has been around since around 1886, apparently, and it's still around allegedly today in a vault somewhere. But the idea is that it then is difficult to be copied or reverse engineered because it is a secret. So you're looking at there at the clauses in your agreements, in your employment agreements, you're looking at your non-disclosure agreements with others, you're looking at actually policing it, and I think you're looking at it being quite clever within your organization of who you share the information with.
Absolutely.
There's nothing worse than an ex-employee or an ex-shareholder or business partner sabotaging your
business. Doesn't look good. It's not great.
Okay, so there's that. I mean, getting back to the recipe, so you can't patent, you keep it a secret. What about the written form of the recipe? I mean, does that protect you in any way?
Yeah. So form of another intellectual property is copyright. And copyright essentially protects what we call literary works. The actual written form of the recipe will be protected by copyright. And copyright, the best part of it, is for free. It automatically vests in the author, provided that you have to show certain requirements, that it's original, that it hasn't been copied elsewhere, and that it's a work. The person who's qualified in South Africa or of a convention country.
Wait, Daniel, you've gone through various things. You're talking about originality, qualified, convention countries.
Okay.
I mean, in very simple terms, what are you saying? He's saying if you live in South Africa.
You live in South Africa.
And you spend a bit of time and effort on this particular recipe and you just write it down. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we need to know that you will automatically have protection? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's so originality is linked to whether or not you've spent some time creating.
It must be of your own sweat, really. It shouldn't be slabs you copied from somewhere else.
Okay.
Ideally, yeah.
So quite a bit of effort.
So let's just quickly recap. We've gone over know-how, we've gone over designs, we've gone over trademarks, we've gone over patents, and we've gone over copyright. So those five forms of intellectual property rights, all kind of reflected through the Coca-Cola product, are protections for all form of intangible rights, with intellectual property rights, what we call intellectual property rights.
Right.
Do you have to be intellectual to be a lawyer?
No.
How do you do this stuff? I mean, you guys, what do you got? You've got degrees. Do you have to have a degree?
Yeah, you do have to have your law degree, your LLB degree, to become a lawyer. And you can branch off after that into different fields. You can be an attorney, you can be an advocate, you can be a legal advisor. But your basis is really to have a law degree.
Okay, we know lawyers aren't really intellectual. So that's good.
We just do this for fun.
Okay, so that's it all in the Coca-Cola bottle.